argument, Larson v. Portage Township. Mr. Lauer.
Good morning, Your Honors. I represent the appellant, plaintiff appellant Jane Larson in this appeal. This is an appeal of a district court decision dismissing Ms. Larson's claims that the failure of the defendant school corporation to renew her contract as principal was based on religious discrimination. Our appeal is based on our contention that there are genuine material issues of fact with respect to the issues of pretext and similarly situated that should have been left to the jury.
So was it Berta who fired her?
Berta gave the initial recommendation that her contract not be renewed. He was the decision maker, and the board affirmed that decision.
What's the board? This is the school board?
School board for the Portage Township Schools.
But are they Christians, these people?
I think for the most part, yes.
But doesn't that... curiosity, if you have the same group alleged to discriminate, isn't it a little implausible that they would discriminate against another Christian if they're Christians?
Generally, that would be correct, Judge. But as we know, black or white supervisors can engage in reverse discrimination against white employees. I think that's a factual issue that should have been left to the jury to determine if there was discrimination.
This isn't a case where they're trying to fill a quota for a minority or something, so they say, yeah, we need more Jews, so they're not going to hire Christians. It's this question whether to include a religious Christmas carol, and I don't know why Christian employers would be hostile to a Christian Christmas carol. Because it was religious. Now, they might feel it caused, you know, disruption in the school. You can imagine that. That's the problem with the teacher or something. But that's different from discrimination on religious grounds, right?
Except I think in this case, Judge, there was a concern voiced by Berta in his deposition testimony that, and in memos, that this was an attempt by my client to get at a Jewish teacher indirectly. And so what he was trying to do was, in our opinion, engaging in disparate treatment that favored the Jewish teacher over my client, who was the Christian principal. And I think it goes back...
Why did Berta favor a Jewish teacher? I mean, I can understand why he finds he has this intolerable situation because of the tension between the principal and the teachers. He has to do something. That doesn't mean he's motivated by any kind of religious feeling. I
would agree with that on the surface. However, if you go back to the first incident, which the appellant or appellee has discussed, and in the district court, it was in November of 2003, in that situation, my client made an inappropriate remark. She was asked, there was an investigation that was held. She was asked to apologize to the Jewish teacher several times, and which is what she did. The investigation cleared her of any deliberate attempts of discrimination or harassment. If you turn the clock forward, in August of 2004, when Berta became the superintendent, the teacher renewed these complaints of harassment, especially citing the remark. My client was again asked to apologize to the teacher, which she did several times, and that was required by Berta. However, in two different meetings, in August of 2004 and September of 2004, this same teacher deliberately made remarks to my client in front of a group of people, calling her anti-Semitic, calling her racist, calling her a liar. There were no sanctions that were issued against this teacher. She was not required to apologize. There was no investigation. Berta just termed it emotionalism.
But look, why isn't the critical fact this, that Berta told the teachers to get together and agree on a song program. And then they agreed, and he was, according to his testimony, he was emphatic. They had to agree. It had to be a consensus. And then the principal, Larson, then objected because he didn't have a religious Christmas carol. So what's he to do? He's told them, isn't that insubordinate on her part? They agreed, the music teachers agreed, that was their job. They have to agree on the songs. And then the principal objects. Objects on a ground which then, you know, reopens all this history of animosity between her and the teacher.
And that's a good point, Judge. Originally, he, in his deposition testimony, considered it insubordination. However, upon further questioning, he considered it more a challenge. But he recognized that her challenge was based on religion. And so, therefore, he knew that when she was coming to him with this, it was two other reasons. One, the religion reason, and one, that the school corporation was violating its own policy with respect to diversity, which he acknowledged. And so if you look at her memo of December 10th, which he says in his deposition led to his decision, it was the culmination of everything, as he claims, to fire her. But if you look closely at that memo, the memo is her attempt in a suggestive manner to point out that he is violating the diversity policy, that you have Kwanzaa song, you have also a Hanukkah song last year, this year in 2004, and she's suggesting to him to be in compliance with that, he should consider Silent Night. And so she's not really being insubordinate. And, you know, he claims that this was a challenge, this was the culmination. It really should be left up to the jury. If you look at that memo and what she said in it, you know, a jury should determine if she's insubordinate or...
He fires her because he doesn't like being challenged. That's not the same thing as firing someone because of her religious beliefs. She could challenge him on anything. She could challenge him on the menu in the school cafeteria. And if he would react the same to any challenge from her, then it doesn't matter what her concerns are.
Okay. And I can see what you're saying, Judge. In this case, though, the challenge is based on religion, which Berta acknowledges. You know, an exercise of religion, a musical song.
Are the Kwanzaa and the Hanukkah songs, are they religious or are they... Right, we have religious Christmas carols, and we have, you know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Right, it's kind of ridiculous, but that's a Christmas carol. So, what about Kwanzaa and Hanukkah? Do they have the same mixture of the secular and the religious?
We have alleged that they are religious songs, and we did allege they are religious songs in this case.
Well,
and the other party
Kwanzaa,
has not.
Is that a religious? What religion is Kwanzaa?
I think it's the African American, Judge.
No, but there's no such thing as an African religion, right? Most Africans are either Christian or Muslim, right? So, it's like, you know, the Star Spangled Banner is not a religious song, right? It's national. So, Kwanzaa, if it's something about African culture, that doesn't necessarily make it religious. And similarly, if Hanukkah is like Christmas, presumably there, you know, there's songs for kids which may have nothing to do with religion, right? Because Judaism, you know, Jews, like Irish, it's ethnicity as well as religion, right? So it's not.
Well, we did have.
So shouldn't she have said, well, you've got, you know, religious songs for black people and Jews, and no religious songs for the Christians?
And I think that's what she did, if you look at the memo.
As I say, we don't know, do we, whether these Kwanzaa songs... I don't think a Kwanzaa song would be religious.
But even if you...
There's no African religion.
Okay.
Right?
But even if you got rid of the...
So why is she so concerned about... Why does she think a Kwanzaa song would require a religious Christmas carol?
Well, I think
it's not a religious
song. She was reproached by two other Christian staff members and who thought... to comply with the diversity policy, that there should be a Christian song in there. And so Holiday or Silent Night is a Christian holiday song. You have to look at this, though, in the context of the whole dispute involving both employees. You know, if you go to November 23rd or November 22nd, this teacher filed an EEO internal complaint against my client, and nothing was done to her. In fact, Berta considered that, he shouldn't punish her for it, et cetera. But my client then comes along several weeks later, and then has a couple memos requesting this, and he terminates her. He asks not to renew her contract. And those memos, are based, they're not insubordination. I mean, if there's a factual issue, are they insubordination? Are they related to religion? It should go to a jury to decide that. If you look at his alleged reasons for letting my client go, they're all intertwined with her relationship with Zuick. And so you have to look at it in the totality of the circumstances. I would like to reserve...
How many time left? But we'll give you a minute.
Okay.
We hear from Mr. Overholt.
Thank you, Judge.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I am Tony Overholt, here representing Portage Township Schools. First, before I begin my argument, I want to address a point that was raised regarding Mr. Berta's role vis-a-vis the school board in making the termination decision. Under Indiana law, the superintendent has the ability to recommend employment decisions to the board, but it is the school board itself, as a separate elected body, that makes the final decision. The superintendent only recommends, the board decides. I just wanted to make that clear for the record. The district court was correct when it granted summary judgment in this case for two reasons. First, plaintiff was not similarly situated to the comparator she identifies, Ms. Zuick. Secondly, there is insufficient evidence of pretext. Plaintiff, as a principal, was not similarly situated to Ms. Zuick for several reasons. First and foremost, they did completely different jobs. As a principal, Ms. Larson was charged with being an administrator for a school, providing leadership to the staff and students, and furthering the goals of student achievement. Ms. Zuick, on the other hand, was a teacher. It was her job to educate students. Those are completely different jobs that have completely different...
I understand the relevance of that. I mean, if the superintendent said to Larson, I don't like Christians, so I'm not renewing your contract, it wouldn't matter that there was no one to compare her with, right?
Well, if that were the case, we'd have a situation where we have direct evidence, and we wouldn't be using the McDonnell-Douglas burden-shifting analysis where we use similarly situated.
Bring in McDonnell-Douglas. I thought their argument was that, she made this reasonable request. She wanted to have a Christian Christmas carol, and he said no. So isn't that her case, that he had no reason to refuse? It was a perfectly reasonable request. And the fact that he didn't grant it shows that he's was hostile to her Christian, not necessarily her beliefs, but the fact that she was advocating for Christianity. Right.
The reason why the request by Ms. Larson led to her termination was because of the history of animosity between Ms. Zuick and the principal. The superintendent found himself in a very, very difficult situation. His school was becoming non-functional because Ms. Larson was not carrying out her duties and responsibilities as a principal to be an effective leader. As the record makes clear, there were people actually outside of this particular school who came up to the superintendent and said, "What's going on at Myers? What's happening there? It's not working." Superintendent, over the course of a year, takes a series of different steps to help resolve this problem. But as the principal, the ultimate burden to reconcile this problem between the principal and Ms. Zuick fell to the principal. She failed in that task. By the time we get to November 2004, we have both Ms. Zuick and the principal being given a set of expectations about performance.
Is Ms. Zuick a tenured teacher?
Yes.
So this is basically a three-year feud between a tenured teacher and a probationary principal, essentially.
Yes, essentially.
And when the probationary principal couldn't get her act in order, pursuant to instructions from the superintendent, she was not renewed. She's the one who took the fall.
Yes. Now, you use the term a probationary principal. I'm not sure that's quite the right term. She was on a two-year contract. The difference is, in Indiana, a principal can be removed much more easily from a position than a teacher.
Right, right. And as the administrator and superior employee in the hierarchy in the school had the responsibility to resolve the conflict rather than exacerbate it.
Absolutely. And then we come to the point where we have all this history, all these things happening, and then contrary to specific instructions from the superintendent saying, I want a system-wide uniform music program, Principal Larson injects herself into the debate when she was told not to and takes a step that was perceived by the superintendent as being done to aggravate Ms. Zuick. The content of it, aside from the fact that it goes to the question of whether she was trying to irritate Ms. Zuick, is almost irrelevant. What matters is the principal disregarded the superintendent's instruction. That's what caused her dismissal. There's no pretext here. There's no inconsistency in the stated reasons for why this happened. The superintendent has been consistent throughout. I worked with this person. I tried to get her to resolve this conflict over the course of a year, and she failed to do it. And the final straw was she was told to stay out of this issue regarding the music program. It was to be left to the music teachers and the assistant superintendent, and she didn't do it. And that was it. He was done with her at that point and made the decision to recommend to the school board that she not be renewed.
Hadn't that music issue been a dispute between Zuick and Larson that the superintendent had to deal with before?
Yes. It was a slightly different question, but...
About the music playing throughout the school?
Yes. So this issue had been... You're exactly right, Judge.
And there was Zuick's attendance at a particular sing-along or something like that?
There was that. There was the fact that Principal Larson instituted a staff ham breakfast. There was, of course, the thing that sort of started this all, the Heil Hitler comment. There were a whole host of things that snowballed over time that just caused great animosity between the two of them. And... again, by the time this final issue arose about the music program, the superintendent was at his aunt. And there's been no identification, again, by the plaintiff, that is in any way pretextual. That's all I have, unless the court has further questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Overholtz. Mr. Lauer, we'll give you a minute if you have anything further want to say.
I believe that there was pretext, Judge, especially as we say in the brief, as of late November of 2004. Berta,
pretext for what?
Well, Berta admitted that her job was not in jeopardy, even as late as 2004. He further acknowledged that when he terminated her, it was after reading the memo of December 10th. So despite all the allegations made by the appellee in this case, as of the end of November of 2004, before the emails, before the request for a Christian song, her job was not in jeopardy. You know, as far as whether, that's why we say if her job was not in jeopardy, then it's a question of fact as to what his true motivation was on December 10th when he read that email with her request for Christian Song, that should have been left to a jury. These other things...
Well, what is there to suggest that it's pretextual? You can see why if the music teachers didn't include a Christian song and he had said that music teachers are the ones who are going to decide what the song program is, he would regard, especially in light of the history with this teacher, but her insistence on a Christian song as a challenge, insubordination, or just making her too difficult, too much of a pain to deal with.
Well, I think that her music teacher did suggest and was the one that suggested Silent Night. And so
the music teachers had gotten together and had decided on a program that didn't have Silent Night. And he had said they were going to make the decision. They're the music teachers. So then she butts in, and you can see how he'd get annoyed, especially given this history, right? She's not towing the line. I don't know why you would say it, what evidence of pretext there was in that.
Because her job was not in jeopardy until that memo. And that's...
Well, it's called the last straw.
Okay, well, that should be... We're asking or we're stating that's a question of fact that should be left up to a jury to decide if that truly was the last straw or it was a pretext.
Well, that's not proof of pretext. You have to present evidence of pretext before you get your trial.
And I think...
What the evidence of pretext is.
Well, even given the history, if her job was not in jeopardy, then it had to be the memo of December 10th. And the memo of December 10th, as said before, Judge, is she's asking for the inclusion of a Christian song in the religious program so it complies with diversity. And so she's exercising her rights as a Christian on behalf of other Christian members of the staff. So it should be up to the jury to decide if religion was a motivating factor in the decision to let her go.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Lack and Mr. Overholt. Next case for argument, United States v.